Well, hello and welcome to what can only be described as the 146th episode of the Adoption and Fostering podcast. The reason I say that is because Scott and I are in the same room. My name's Al Coates.
My name is Scott Cassandrone.
And we're sat in your sofas in your living room.
We are, for a change. A change.
I'm working to say positive change.
We're getting more regular at it because of the changes that have happened in the
and
world.
And on that bombshell, Scott is more regular.
I've been more regular since March, anyway.
Oh, I've heard that. This is a bit of a non... It's not a non-episode. It's just
no.
We've had to...
Stop putting yourself down.
No, that's what you're
here
I've
been
for.
Doing that all day.
We've spent the day... Tell me what we've been doing.
Oh, we've spent the last 2 days to get... Well, 1.5 days.
It's felt however, so yeah, much longer.
It has. It's felt like...
Like a lifetime.
Like a lifetime.
Sentence.
So today was the official opening of the FASD Ireland offices. And... yeah, it's been quite a couple of days, really, hasn't
we've
it?
We've been hobnobbing it with the hoi polloi of Western Ireland, haven't yeah. we? Literally.
Well, I mean, literally. The thing is, I have to make the joke very quickly, because obviously, normally when you speak to ministers, they leave a week later.
Oh, I'm just hoping. Kiss of death, isn't it?
I'm hoping this doesn't happen, but we did have a privilege, and I've said this before, I'm not very political. As far as I'm concerned, a minister is a minister. It doesn't matter what their affiliation is, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But today we welcomed the Minister for Disabilities, a lady called Anne Rabbit, who is not too far from us, actually. She lives up Galway way. But essentially, the local government representative, I hate to use the words, but I sometimes need to, so we call them TDs here. You call them MPs in the UK, but they're called TDs.
They've got a different
here.
System, haven't they?
And our local TD, who we are very much supported by, Cal Crowe, his name is.
He's a lovely man.
He is. He's such a gem. He really is. I mean, he can't, you know, he doesn't look great in photos, but, you know, he's
You can't. I mean, if you were an oil painting yourself, I'd take that, but frankly.
True. But anyway, he's been a massive supporter of us since we reached out to him. However long ago it was, and when we set up the offices, he came in for a visit and he was really shocked. I don't know whether I should take it as a compliment or an insult, but he was really shocked at how well the offices were laid out, how professional they were, how our plans were.
Wall-to-wall carpet?
Well, no, not quite. I mean, we've got carpet on the stairs.
Hot and cold running water.
He organised it for us because he knew that, you know, he's taken the time to listen to us about FASD, what it is, you know, the kind of all the information that we have on it, that we, you know, have learned, that we know, that we, the feedback that we get from parents and people and stuff. And he really gets it. He understands that he's a school teacher. And he said this today in his speech, actually. Yeah. He said when he first spoke to Tris, he just clicked. It just clicked with him that this, you know, he has seen this so often. But in his time as a teacher, he had only had one child with an FASD diagnosis.
And because it was interesting, there was lots of dignitaries there. There was the mayor, local mayor.
Oh, yes.
And everything, the landscape's very similar, but very different. It's I recommend coming to Ireland. It's lovely.
I hope you have enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, and amazingly diverse.
Yes. Hugely.
We're off point already, but
you've
got a Brazilian shop and you're in the, like a shop for people from Brazil, and it's in the west.
That's not what a Brazilian shop is.
Well, it's a different
not
shop.
Not that kind of Brazilian.
Very hot here. And it's rural west coast island, and you've got a community of people from Brazil. Brilliant, I guess.
I mean, I was saying to you, Jacob's school, like, community, you know, there's Nigerians, there's Algerians, there's Americans, you know, there's just a whole, it's just a kaleidoscope colour, it really is, and you know it is amazing. I'm still trying to get used to it because having lived here before, it was very white or white Eastern European.
Yeah,
and now there's so many different colours.
It is,
but
amazing.
It's so diverse
for a rural really community because I come from a rural community.
Yeah, of course,
and it's just white.
Yeah, exactly.
White British English.
Yeah, so that was today. So you know, well, as you know, because you were here last night when I was decorating my cup, well, not decorating them, but when I was baking my cupcakes,
fashioning
them for the opening, and
it was a wonder to behold.
Yeah, it was a fabulous day, and there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of press there as well, which was like,
but It's hard, it's because you're moving from one culture and sort of like from the UK culture coming here, and then you sort of, you just laying out some little stats around, was it 4.8% they estimate, and Ireland's got the highest prevalence, and just saying that actually this is something that's not, it's a significant minority of adults and children.
I think the interesting thing here is that there's no pathway to diagnosis, which is a big thing. It exists here. I mean, if you know, our local clinical psychologist from CAMHS was there today, who, you know, we see as a family, and she came to the opening. She knows all about FASD, and she can recognise it and she can see it, but there's no way for her to diagnose it because it's not a recognised condition here. And that was the whole point of getting the Minister for Disabilities to come along. Now, you know, she said in her speech, she spoke to Tris 2 years ago. She gets 45 minutes per appointment, and she spent 2 hours on the Zoom call with
him.
And she just wanted more information. And it's taken her this long to kind of work out a way to get this mainstream, you know. And today was the first step in doing that, really, for her, because we've taken the courage, I guess, to start something and see what happens, you know.
And I think it's really helpful. I mean, from my point of view, coming from a different, you have as well, but coming from the UK where you see things, it's easy to become sort of slightly cynical about, we don't do this and we don't do that. And it's interesting to go somewhere else where those things are not present, and there's other things that are maybe better.
Yes.
There's other things that are just not existent. And you go, sometimes it's helpful to not take things for granted, because it is much more widely known about in the UK, much accepted. And I think there's an element of shame here, culturally a lot of shame that we're a bit ahead in the UK. Yeah. And so just it's nice to kind of get that comparison.
Exactly. And you have to remember here, I mean, adoption figures are very low here. So a lot of these children with FASD will still be living within the biological family. And the shame thing is going to be a lot more prevalent here than it would be in the UK. And that's not blaming anybody, but because the majority of children who get diagnosed with FASD in the UK are adopted or in the care system.
Because the people who are pushing the diagnosis not getting the stigma. And I had that in foster care recently, where someone was, we need to get a diagnosis, but there was no hint of, this doesn't wash up on me.
No, exactly. So there's nothing lost, is there? You know. So that's a big difference here. And of course, you have different communities here. You know, you have, like we're saying, you've got very diverse ethnicities, but you've also got a travelling community as well. You know, we don't know how that affects them.
Yeah.
We don't know how alcohol consumption affects them. We don't know how that all works.
Well, yeah, in their culture, not necessarily them as individuals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yes, that's what I meant. Yeah. So it's a really interesting time and really interesting opportunity. And you know, in our time, you know, it's like anything, you're a caretaker, aren't you? You're a caretaker of whatever it is that you do until the next person, or till you retire, or till you leave, or
that's
whatever.
A good segue,
is it?
Yeah, keep going.
All right. So you know, we're not going to fix it all in the time that we have FASD Ireland, but if we can get it to a point where people are more aware of it, then that's what we know that it's really difficult to support families with FASD. We'd love to do that, and that is the plan longer term. But for now, it's about awareness and about kind of bringing those numbers down a bit more. So that's
It was wonderful to be here.
I'm really grateful that you were. You were painting in your GIMP uniform.
And I was very brave with my little finger.
With his broken finger, bless you. Painting away yesterday.
I'm having a terrible holiday.
I know you are. You're just not doing well. You shouldn't just have holidays. It's that simple.
I normally take an emotional crash in a holiday because my whole sense of self is wrapped up in what I do. When I'm not allowed to do it, I realise how devoid and empty my life is.
I think it's come back to bite you this holiday.
Literally.
With a dead pet. Bless her.
Yeah. If people follow me on social media, my dog died in an accident. And I have to apologise to Scott because I sent him a picture of the aftermath. The dog died in a very unpleasant way.
Yeah. And you had to carry her home.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really horrible experience. Yeah. And we're all really sad because I do 14,000 steps a day on average this year. And that's because I just love walking my dog.
Yeah.
So you still
got the other one.
Yeah. Good old Esther's an absolute star, but she's a bit glum.
Well, she would be. That's her daughter that died.
Yeah. I think she was secretly quite happy because she used to bite her face. I mean, it has been notable that none of us have been bitten since she's died.
which, oh, bless her.
Oh, yeah. She's,
that was just her thing, wasn't
she,
it?
She was one. I kind of had a thought about it that, you know, she's so bright that perhaps evolution was kind of saying, this dog is too bright, it needs to die. Well, we had to change the handles and all of the house to door knobs because she was just opening doors and going where she wanted.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She was like an evil genius.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I'm not going to comment on whether that was...
Yeah. And I was like going to work with bite marks on my head.
Yeah. Like, I remember you said she'd sunk her teeth into your head.
Yeah, into my head. And it's not an aggression. It was just like, oh, she just couldn't help herself. It was just... Like, oh, yeah, anyway, we don't need to talk about my cunt. But I've been wanting to talk to you because I feel like we've been a podcast coming up now for, this will be our seventh, end of our sixth year in October.
Days.
And I'm reflecting that we're not the bright young things we were. Are we? Were we?
Well, I'm certainly not.
There's much water has passed in the bridge. And I've been really thinking about what is the future hold for us in relation to adoption, because it feels like lots of bits of the landscape have moved, and I feel like adoption isn't... Whereas when we started, adoption was the gold standard. As much as everyone went, adoption's not the gold standard, from a policy and a financial and a conversation point of view.
Well, also, I mean, it was what I did when we started this as well.
Of course, yes.
Because obviously I'm fully immersed in 150 hours a week at Adoption UK.
At the DfE and...
In the DfN, that's how we met at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah. I do have fond memories of those meetings. I still chuckle now thinking of you kicking me. It was like naughty schoolboys kicking each other under the table because you were...
But we always used to go and have a cup of tea afterwards.
A cup of tea. A chit chat. Yeah. I just wonder whether we were chatting, weren't we, about...
The future.
There's a few things, right? I haven't chatted to you about this because I wanted to have this conversation.
Oh, yes, you said about this because
I'm wondering whether we should stop having adoptees on the podcast.
Oh, why?
I just wonder whether actually, for one, we recently had someone on, Liz Harvey, it was fantastic, and I misintroduced her. Not that she complained.
No.
Someone else complained about how I introduced her.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a long... And so I corrected that. That was fine. But I thought, are we putting people... Because of maybe the environment around adoptees, are we putting people in the targets of other people?
Okay, yeah.
I really don't want to do that. I don't want to be part of that narrative where anyone who hasn't got... Like, there's an orthodoxy about this is what people must say about adoption as an adoptee. And we get people, all kinds of people come and they can say whatever they want. If they say that, then are we putting them in the crosshairs? I don't want to be part of, poor Liz Harvey got a right roasting because she was on the podcast. And you think, well, I don't want to be part of that. And also I'm thinking, blowing our own trumpets, am I? We've worked really hard to try and promote everyone's voices. And of course that's self-selecting to a point, and we've said yes to everyone.
Yes.
I don't think there's anyone, there's only one person I've ever denied, and that was an argument over a PDF.
Oh, I'm tempted to ask you who, but I know you won't answer that.
No, I can't.
It's recorded.
That was an argument over a PDF, and it was an adoptive parent. But anyways, it's like really odd.
Oh, I can't wait to hear who this is afterwards.
It's Tish Dash Dosh. And I just think, do we need to step back and go, right, well, take your own place and create your own world for that?
I mean, I think it's an interesting point. I mean, I think there's a couple of things in there. So number one is that we have never said, oh, we are the voice of adoptees.
Nope.
But what we have tried to do is give a platform for them to share their stories in whatever way, whether that's coming on as guests on our podcast or going on conversations.
Yeah.
And I guess that's when we started to have adoptees on, wasn't it? Through conversations. And then as time went on, like us, intelligent people, nothing wrong with them. They have views, they have opinions, they do professional jobs,
censorship.
They do non-professional jobs, all the sense. So that's why we had it. So I think in some ways you've got a point because, our podcast was for adoptive parents. That's what we started off to do.
Yeah.
We didn't start out to help anybody else within the kind of...
Our views on...
exactly.
Our
and
stuff.
It was... I mean, our first guest, we were probably more nervous than our first guest was, I would imagine, because we'd never...
You were our first guest.
Well, yeah, I mean... Yeah.
But I know what you mean.
That was a little bit different, wasn't it?
That was very different. Oh, we were so young.
Yeah, but I guess you're right, because actually what... happened with Liz is the prime example of, I don't want to call it a pylon, but effectively a pylon, where Liz was trying to do something to help the whole adoption community.
Absolutely.
Not just by coming on, but by doing what she did with
the select committee.
Yeah, the select committee. And then putting herself out there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like she's getting abused for it. And I don't think that's really fair.
And with all respect, people from a different continent having wading in about things that were really quite specific to the UK
as well. So. And I guess the other thing for me really is about the... I mean, you know, as parents, and I'm not just talking about me and you, but I can talk for me and you because I know we have learned so much from having adoptees on the podcast, whether that's been through conversations or because it's actually made me rethink some of the ways that I have parented over the years. And, you know, we're both still doing it. We've both still got relatively young'uns in our house who we have to do, you know, lots
the
of
day by day stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So there's it's a funny one because, you know, actually by now I would have hoped that, like you and I, somebody would have picked up a podcast for adoptees and gone, I'm going to do that for the UK specific.
Yeah,
because there are ones in the US, isn't there?
But
don't get me wrong, a lot of it is the same, but some of it is different. And I'm surprised that nobody has done yet, because actually, you know, if you're sitting waiting on somebody to pay you for it, you'll be waiting a long time.
Oh yeah,
because that's not how it works. Yeah. I mean, Al is literally nearly bankrupt from
if people are regular listeners, they know that the cake sponsorship did not come through.
Clearly,
I've eaten cake though. It's a labour of love.
But that to me surprises it, because you know, adoptees. And sorry if anybody's listening and don't like being called an adoptee, but adopted adults, whatever you term yourself,
plainly.
you could do it as well. It doesn't, you know, it's...
I know what you're saying, if Al can do it.
Well, if Al could do it, anybody could do it. But that's the point, isn't it? You know, we've been criticised over the years for being this, that and the next thing. If we've ever said anything that's been picked up, it's not been pointed out to me specifically.
No one's ever come at me.
But all I've done is learn from the experiences of those that we've talked to. And that's not just contained to adoptees. That's contained to social workers, to adoptive parents, to birth parents.
Yeah.
You know, the whole range of people that we've had on. So I'm not, you know, not trying to say we're the best and what have you.
No, we just create a platform. That's all we've done. We sort of commentate on the people who come through. We're just commentators. We're not...
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing beyond that, really.
And we've kept going despite the criticism.
Yeah, because I'm thick-skinned and you run away.
You hide me from it. You hide it from me.
Yeah, do I should.
Bar
I
one or two that slip through this now and again.
I looked at that, and I mean, it feels like a bit of a overstatement to say that, but I just wondered, in the grand scheme of things, and I think it reflects maybe our family life as well, is that adoption isn't the defining thing, but there's...
No.
I mean, for us as a family, it is, you know, it is. But it is defined. It is very fundamental. Yeah. But there's so much more going on that is related to the what stuff that's relevant to the wider community. So we had this conversation today, didn't we, about do we want to broaden out the scope of the podcast to include fostering and permanency and kinship and focus on the issues that are universal for everyone and then bring specifics in?
Mm.
Because it is the Adoption Fostering Podcast, but it's the Adoption Podcast, isn't it?
Well, it is. Really.
It is.
And I mean, well, I think we've probably over the years both recognised that without actually saying it out loud not today, but, you know, recently. And I think that, you know, we've spoken to a number of people who are involved in adoption. We've seen regionalisation come in. Regionalisation was a big chunk of lots of things when we first started, because that's when it first started.
Yeah.
So it's really taken over in terms of adoption being, like you said, the gold standard and all this sort of stuff. And you and I have both lived through this kind of phase where things have changed in terms of SGOs and kinship. And rightly, that is, you know, that has increased and it should have done.
Totally.
But we aren't the professionals when it comes to talking about that, in the same way we're not about how it feels to be adopted or how it is to be adopted.
Yeah.
So I guess in the same way, you know, you're talking about having not having adoptees on anymore, I think that we, rather than not having adoptees on, that we broaden it out, but we have people who know their onions. Like when we have Emma on to talk about fostering. Yeah. You and I have both been foster carers, not as long as she has. She knows what fostering is.
She's lived it.
We've lived it. But not quite to the same level or extent as she yeah. is. So when we have her on, it's always an interesting chat because mm-hmm. she brings with her just a breadth of information.
That lived life.
Yeah.
And we, you know, and different people who've come on and talked about it. So maybe it is just that we broaden it out and we, and you know, just even Twitter today, people saying, you know, we just look at issues that are related to the diversity of the community and the challenges yeah. of raising children who've mm-hmm. experienced trauma and that maybe broadens it out. I don't know. I just feel a little bit frustrated. I don't feel particularly miffed, and I don't take it personally when you know we get a bit of pushback. I don't. It's fine. You know,
pushback is good.
Yeah,
it's just the way it's perhaps
articulated.
Yes, which I've always said. Because I've always said, if you know, and I say this to my kids as well, debate with me.
Let's have a.
But if you're going to be rude to me, because at the end of the day, I am a human being as well.
Yeah.
As you are.
Yeah.
Then it stops.
That's a line.
Yeah, there is a line.
The minute you start calling
because
me
I'm respecting you as a human being, so therefore respect me back, yeah. and I will listen to your views and opinions.
Yeah. So we did talk. I mean, we jokingly talked about rebranding the podcast, didn't we? About what maybe kind of keeping.
Not just changing the image, the logo or anything.
A blue logo.
It's
got to be red. You know how I feel about red.
Yes, you like a bit of red.
I do like a bit of red. But I'm really, that excites me about the future. And I think that somewhere we've, and actually the future for children who need long-term families is much more diverse than it was. And maybe that's the key issue, isn't it? Six years ago, it was adoption or fostering.
Yeah.
And now it feels like there's so many more options and we can use the platform to draw in all that expertise and maybe create a.
I mean, when you think about tool. You know the support, and yes, I know there's people who are listening and going, "What support?" But there is support for adoptive parents.
Oh yeah,
yeah. There is training for adoptive parents. There is assessments for adoptive parents. You know, I'd love to get to the bottom of you know what it looks like for a kinship carer as an example.
Yeah.
What does their assessment look like? I know what it looked like 10, 12 years ago when I used to sit on a permanence panel. And we used to get kinship carers. Mm-hmm. This was at the time where they were trying to increase the number of children within the family, to remain in the family. But it's very different to how it looks now. And I'd love to get to the bottom of that. But I'd also like to get to the bottom of the realities of some of the support that they're getting or not getting.
Yeah.
Whether that's financial or, you know.
Yeah, and by the time this goes out, there'll be in a podcast where someone talking about contact in kinship arrangements and doing a PhD. So I feel like there's lots of stuff that we could explore, and I think adoption will always be massively central to our lives. And I think that we've lobbied hard and changed the conversation. We talked about this without blowing
We did. And that's not, I don't think that's us blowing our own trumpets. I think that that is true. I think that we have come along as independent human beings who have experience as adoptive parents and changed certain elements of, you know, how it's perceived.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've also brought on guests who've done it, who've helped us to do that. It's not just you and I. You know, I think of Mark Orr's.
Yeah.
Just as an example, because he's quite recent. So we've had Mark on twice, three times. And every time he comes on, I always feel that he's learned, as he's gone on as well, because he's an adoptive parent, but he also does a job within adoption. And I feel that that helps us. We help him because he does listen to us. If we have a conversation with him, he listens.
We have influenced the influencers, haven't we?
And I think
like Will Quint. Oh, he went and designed, didn't he? But I felt that. I still wake up in the night.
You're still miffed by that.
I am. Well, I just felt we genuinely moved the dial with Will.
Yeah.
And then he went and jogged off.
Well, it could have been worse.
I mean,
could have been Underwood.
By the time this comes out, he could be Prime Minister. I mean, honestly, we're recording this on what, the 31st of August, by the 5th.
There's only 6 days to go until you get
We'll find out who's, and he might be the Chancellor, you never know.
You never know who.
Literally, you don't know. Or he might be sweeping the corridors.
Exactly. Yeah. You could be working in the tea room.
I feel quite positive about the future now.
Well, I do as well. I mean, I don't think that there's any... like you said to me yesterday, you never listen to a podcast and go, oh, that was a pile of rubbish. And what I mean by that is you don't think, I'm done with this now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Yeah, no.
I mean, blogging lasted less time than podcasting.
Oh, no, no, it didn't. Oh, did I blogged right through till the end of 2018 and I put a blog out. And see, I'd always started with blog. I started blogging at September 23 at 13. And I did every other week, and then I thought, I need to do it weekly. And I did it week, which is exactly the same pattern as I did with the podcast. Mm-hmm. And my superpower was the kind of reliability. It came out on Friday morning, mm-hmm. so people would get part of it. And then I thought, well, how do you end that? Mm-hmm. How do you not kind of just have a blog that trails off? You have to end it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of put a post saying, I'm stopping. I will post.
But don't expect every week.
Yeah. And that overlapped. And I think that's because I really enjoyed the podcasting format and I really enjoy talking.
Yeah.
And talking to people. I think that's that interaction. Yeah. And I think we were talking about this today as well. I think that if I hadn't done it with you, because we are like chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
Totally.
Talks.
In so many ways.
Talks, man.
Talks. But we've got a shared experience. And I think that if we were saying today, it just cheers me up.
Yeah.
I mean, like, beforehand, I'm like, oh, no, I've got to do a podcast. And then halfway through, I'm, like, having a laugh, like, I'm texting you, calling you an idiot. halfway through an interview because you've forgot something or you're sending me a gif of a baby throwing up or something.
Yeah, whatever.
And it's a really enjoyable hobby. Mm. So if no one listened, that, yeah, I want people to listen, but if no one listened, it wouldn't stop me.
I know, because I don't... I wouldn't even know where to start looking, but I know that you do look at some of the figures of our podcast and other podcasts, and you know, we know we've got a good listenership.
We were a big fish in a little pond, I think.
Yeah,
in the UK.
Is that the right word?
Yeah, we are a big fish in a little pond.
Okay.
Yeah, some of the American ones are huge.
Yeah.
I mean, they're literally living off the benefits of that.
Well, exactly.
And their Learjets.
I'm talking about within our community.
You can't even get sticky buns.
Yeah, no, I can't even get a cake promotion.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Greggs.
Could you imagine? But you've just promoted Greggs for free, you see.
Why did you do that? I'm passionate about Greggs.
Well, I know, because you've got one at the end of your road, so you're just looking for a free bun.
Oh, do you know what I did with the dog on the last day? I went and we shared a bacon sandwich, me and the two dogs. So I'm not sure I can go back to Greggs now without having a measure of sadness.
There's triggers and trauma everywhere.
I'm genuinely traumatised by what happened to the dog. I can cope with the fact she's dead. It's just the fact that I had to carry her back to the house.
Did you actually see it go?
No, I didn't see it.
No, okay. That's fine. We don't need to go into it. There's part of me that just wanted to...
But Shania was with me. She was...
Oh.
Shall I tell her the story? Right, so I lost the dog. The dog ran off and she does that, but she didn't come back and I couldn't find her. So I was, for about 20 minutes, I'm looking. So I rang Shania and I said, look, Shania was at home. I said, well, just ride your bike up the lane and see if you see her so she doesn't get on the farm and cause chaos. And then I saw the dog dead. I went, oh, damn. And she's not, but she's dead. So I'll go and retrieve her. But I thought, oh, I've got another dog with me. I can't go to where she needs to be to retrieve her. I'm dancing around some of this because it's gruesome.
Yeah.
And so Shania came and she held the dog and I went and got the dog, pulled her back. And then, she was fairly in one piece and we said goodbye and the dog sniffed around and we kind of had our moment, a delicate moment. And then I had to carry her like half a mile over my shoulder.
It's not good.
It's not good. It was not pretty. Anyway, it was pretty grim. And in the midst of all that, I was really affected by... I'd been doing some training about childhood adversity. And you're going, this is a real moment for my daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, what have I done? I've traumatised my child. Yeah. Like, literally, you know, come, be adopted. Everything will be fine. Oh, no, you've been adopted by a maniac.
Yeah.
And in the midst of all that, I thought, actually, well, know that this is part of life. And actually, this... we really talked about it and really connected. But I was really conscious of, you know, there's been other losses in little ones' lives. And we just sort of really, we just checked in and we were really delicate with each other. And within 30 seconds, just now I was making a joke about something and everything in me wanted to go, what the bloody hell, it's an inappropriate joke. And then I was kind of putting my theoretical head in, because I was quite traumatised. This theoretical head about the how children process, how we all process grief, which is like you process your grief and then you flit out and get on with life and then you process your grief. It's like it's called the dual process model of grief.
Yeah,
you've probably heard of the grief cycle, but it's this idea that children flit in, flit out. And she was like that all day. She was like having a great time, laughing and joy. And then she was like, Santa. And we've been like that, and we're all a bit at a loss. Anyway, so I don't know how I got onto that. It was a long grasp, but it was Greg's. That's where it started.
Oh, yeah, that sounds...
But if you get the Greg's app, I tell everyone, because on your birthday, they send you a free cake. They don't send you it. You have to go and get it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the Greg's man turning up your door. Here's
your cake. Yeah, hiya, Greg Greg's.
Listen, I got writing on a coffee cup today.
You did, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
There's nothing else really on my agenda. I mean, we can talk forever.
You have an agenda?
I have had an agenda from day one, mate.
Well, I think to say that, you know, today was really useful for No Borders as well. in terms of, you know, some of the opportunities that may come up in Ireland.
Yeah.
We met Maggie May today.
Yeah, we're going to have a podcast with Maggie May. Yeah, we're going to record
podcast with Maggie May. So Maggie May is a young... lady who...
Woman.
What's the difference? Lady sounds nicer than woman.
No.
Go on.
Social work hat, right? So lady is a value statement. It's a judgment about her class.
Really? Yeah. Oh my God, you social workers need to...
get a life.
Get into 2022.
No, it's true, but it's... I come from like an environment where a church and it would be like, oh, the ladies are going to make cakes now and the men are going to talk about stuff. You go, well, so why are they men? Why are they not gentlemen and the ladies? Why is it the ladies? Could you a lady? So, words matter. Words matter. She's a woman.
Well, we know that. Right, okay. So anyway, Maggie May, who's young.
See, you've got me. Do you know what? I had a pint of Guinness. I've had a pint.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's maybe 20 years since I've had a pint of Guinness and I can't feel my legs.
It's actually 3 years since she had a pint of Guinness. She had one in 2019.
Did I?
On the way out.
Obviously, it was so traumatic. Threw you out. I've wiped it from my memory because I was so very drunk.
Yes, well, yes, we were taken out to dinner tonight, weren't we?
It was very nice. Oh, by someone else who we want to get on the podcast.
Yes.
Can we say who he is and we'll lobby? Say who he is. Yeah. So Paul, what's his surname? I don't know.
You can even remember the minister's name earlier, so
I don't know.
Paul White.
Paul White, and he's the CEO of Hidden Disabilities
Sunflower
Scheme. Are you repeating everything I'm saying? I'm that drunk. It feels like
you've
had
one pie, man.
And that was 4 hours ago.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought he'd be a fantastic guest and very similar to Mad Lug Dave.
Yes, yeah. In a similar kind of style.
But genuinely affecting a really practical, tangible way of affecting the quality of people's lives.
Yeah.
Really good.
And, well, he was there today because obviously part of our funding comes from some of the work that we do with them. And he came and he kind of... I guess that was the major launch of Hidden Disabilities in Ireland, actually. Hidden Disability Sunflower Scheme in Ireland, because it's...
Yeah.
You know, we worked in tandem. The press were there. You know, there's photographs taken. There's a whole thing bang of stuff.
It was noted that lit connection's been made with the Ryanair, which is, by the time this comes out, that'll be announced.
Hopefully. Because you've just said it.
Well, the minister said it today, didn't she?
I know.
So that's out.
So did Paul.
But you think... For a lot of people, that's a big deal,
a huge
isn't it?
Thing,
you know, and
huge. And I mean, to say I'm quite proud of my husband would be an understatement. I mean, who the heck gets Ryanair to?
Well, the minister said.
Hidden disability,
you know, he's a slippery fish.
Yeah, and you know, and they have literally, you know, they have taken it on. They're training all their staff, their head office staff, their cabin crew, their, you know, ground staff, the whole jing bang. So. That's huge.
You can look at like aviation and go, well, you know, well, do kids need to go on train airplanes? Well, not necessarily. But then the whole hidden disabilities thing is then like washes into buses and everyone needs to get a bus. So
exactly.
But kids going to school or families going wherever they need to go. So I think that would be really good to get him in. And I think that sort of reflects the new where we want to go with stuff that's a bit
it's
broader out there, but it's, generic.
Yeah, but it's actually it's applicable to our families, isn't it? You know, I mean, I can, you know yourself, I have a sunflower now, a sunflower lanyard.
Do you?
Yeah.
Because you're Scottish?
No. No, because I have a hidden disability.
Because you're Scottish. No. When you wear your kilt, you don't have to wear your...
Yeah, that is a disability.
We got on the plane to Tim's. There's a man with a kilt on.
So there's a man with a big disability.
He's been on
or a very small
to
one.
Scotland. Like when he went to Mexico, he came back with a sombrero.
Okay, I feel like we need to finish now. But yeah, and being aware now, and you know, we just come back from holiday. I wore it in airports. It was recognised in a number of the places, and you don't get any priority treatment or any special treatment. It's just that people are more aware of the fact that you might just need some,
give you a bit of peace,
a bit special.
Yeah, I was trying to lobby you for one for being colourblind, but apparently he was not having that, was he?
No, he wasn't, was he?
I'm gonna, when you get on the podcast, I'll corner him.
So
come on. Why is it not a disability?
But before we invite him, I'm going to have to talk to him about his language, because we would need to put an E.
He would make a pirate blush, that man.
Yeah. He's proper Essex, isn't he?
He did
a recording for you, didn't he? Because you were doing little videos.
Yeah.
I was there when he did it.
My name is
Mark O'Kine. Because that's what he sounded like.
That's funny.
That's not his name, but you know.
It's not his name. Is there anything else then for the list?
I don't know. Let me check my list. No,
nothing on my list as well. I think that we feel it as a sense of genuine shifting. And I think that reflects the wider context, the stuff off the back of the care review.
Mm. Mm.
And the thing, Adoption it? Special Guardian Leadership Board Day Away, where it was very much 50%, 50% SGO, 50% adoption. And it's all gone very quiet.
Yeah.
Over there.
And it's interesting as well because, you know, the more I look back on my time with, like, Adoption UK, being at the SGOB, you know, all those sorts of things, I think that there will always be people who require support because of adoption. There will always be a need for parents who are not biological, as in, you know, adoptive parents. Yeah. But I just think that as time goes on, it's going to get less and less and less. And
that would be our hope.
Yeah. And to be fair, that is the way I feel about it. You know, I never used to feel like that about it. And I'm not being negative about adoption. I would do it all again. Of course I would. But I would just like to hope that we've gotten to a point now where people are going, right, let's take a step back here. Let's look at this properly and make a decision for these children that's going to suit them into their adulthood. And not the other way around.
Yeah, not getting stuck into those tram lines, those sort of historic tram lines of, well, if it's a bit messy going back, then it's adoption.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or can we... And I think that's where, if you get kinship support, can you then support a grandma or an auntie or a sibling or something?
Yeah.
And that, for me, feels right. And I feel that's something I can put my shoulder behind, because I think that's probably part of the messy conflict. And I think online with a lot of voices that are very clearly anti-adoption.
Yeah.
And I get that.
Yeah.
Totally get that.
Yeah.
But that, and it was interesting, I've seen a few tweets recently and sort of joined in a bit about where people saying, yes, but there is always going to be a case. But that feels like this isn't the place to be having that conversation.
Yeah, you're right. But not in 140 characters or 280 characters.
No, you're not going to win. But it makes me think about the future of the adoption sector in relation to the amount of staff.
Yeah.
If you think back 5 years, there was 170-odd agencies.
Yeah.
We're down to 32, 34
exactly,
something.
Yeah.
And even that feels like a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of staff.
And the staff are very much focusing on adoption as well.
That's their job, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, adoption used to be like, again, the gold standard of social work, didn't it? If you were working in adoption, you know, that was probably where you were going to retire.
Yeah, from you'd what reached
it. Yeah. And now, that's not quite how it's going to...
And again, there's a whole, it's a really shifting, I'd love to be able to kind of wind the clock forward 15, 20 years and think, all right, will we be a peculiarity as adoptive parents?
Yeah.
And you're seeing people sort of coming into adoption from infertility and you know, same-sex families and single people. And you're going, you're not joining in the world that we joined in 10, 15, 20 years ago.
And I think that's the case anyway, isn't it? You know, I look at, you know, some of the, well, for me, same-sex families, you know, and it's just so different.
Yeah.
It's so, so very different for them. They, again, might not feel like it, but they have it so much better.
That sounds like midges on the
miserable. But it's true.
You
but
don't know you're yeah, born.
No, you don't know you're born, you know. Anyway, but that's just how it is, I'm afraid. You know, because cool. things have improved.
Excellent stuff. So I am flying back to Angleterre tomorrow, which I'm pretty excited about.
That's tomorrow, isn't it? So that's 12, is it 12 hours time?
But yes.
You don't mind being dropped off the airport 20 minutes?
No, that's absolutely fine. As long as there's a got Wi-Fi, I'm totally fine. I'll get out.
To be fair, if that was to happen, you would actually be fine with that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would cause so much mischief on the internet. Yeah, I would start bun fights. Yeah. I'm really excited because I'm going to the finger doctor tomorrow and I'm going to tell him to break the bugger and put it pointing in the right direction. It hurts like a melon farmer.
It just feels like a rubbish year for us both, really, doesn't it? In some ways.
Fine. You've had it much. I'm fine. Well, yeah. I'm totally fine.
Got to go in for my.
Yeah, and I've got a few more days.
My procedure.
Oh yeah, but so this will be the last one, before you get burly men running you through with 30 yards of drainage rods.
If anybody is seriously listening and feel any empathy for me at all, on the 15th of September, I shall be in hospital for a procedure to check that everything that they did on the 13th of March has worked.
You're fine.
But it's not just a case of going, you know, and I'm going, well, let's have a look.
Can you touch your nose?
You're tickety-boo. It's a little bit more kind of extreme.
But I mean, it's easy to miss that, but there's people going to fiddle on with your head. Yeah, I mean, that's quite a worry, isn't it? Yeah. I know you are quite worried.
Yeah, I am genuinely quite worried. Nobody seems to get it. You're the first person that's actually had any empathy for it at all. I say it to Tris.
And that's the most empathy you've had? Yeah, wow, that's exactly. Really concerning, isn't it?
I say it to Tris and I'm like, do you think they'll give me any, what was it called?
Sedatives.
Yeah, and he's like, no, they'll just go in. They'll whack it in. I'm like, oh, cheers, mate. Thanks for that.
I would have thought they'll give you something.
If not, I'm just going
to Google it. Because Google knows everything.
I tried Google. It says nothing for this particular
Yeah, who
procedure.
Does? I mean, imagine working at Google, right?
And having to put this rubbish
and being
on
the occupational health person for the Google staff. That would be like, that would, can you imagine the mind meld that would be? Because more legates. Right, let's have a look. Oh, I don't know.
But also justifying their position by going,
making stuff up.
I'll come back to you, Google.
Cancer. Because that's what all Google says.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
One of my children is literally Googles themselves into a point of near cardiac arrest.
So does my husband.
Does he?
Yes.
Oh, I can't get that. I just don't get it.
He diagnosed himself with gout. So me and the boys call it Google gout.
I'm the exact opposite, because when I broke my... And I did break my finger, but I fell over just the first day of my holiday. I fell over into a rock pool with Shania. So Shania's had a...
I know, like, you've really done it to her this year, haven't you?
Please, Daddy, don't take any more time off work. and it was pointing in the wrong direction. It was clearly not right. And so I kind of went, oh, it's... So we, and I said, shall we just go... I was, like, trying to be brave, because I didn't want to freak her out. I was like, why don't we just go back to the car? And the dogs pounced on me. This was when he had two dogs. Yeah. So I'm laid in a rock pool, like rolling around on the floor.
With them,
and they jump on me and I get out. I go, listen. And we walked back and halfway along the walk, I thought, yeah, I'm feeling queasy and a bit lightheaded. I said, why don't you sit down and have a little bit, think what we're going to do? And she was like 10-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm going,
shut up.
Short breaths.
Yeah.
And got back home and I went to see my neighbour, Eddie, and I said, Eddie, look at this.
Finger hanging off.
Yeah, Paul Organ. And I said, look at this. What do you think about this? And I was like doing things with it. And because I'd nipped the bone there and I nipped the bone there and then I nipped that bone and heard it crunch and thought, that's not good. That's not what it's meant to do.
No.
And Eddie looked at it and he went, you should go to hospital. And I went, can I not just strap it up to the other finger? Because honestly, I'll be in hospital for hours. And he went, nah, you need to go to hospital. So that was how I ended up in hospital anyway.
It sounds similar to me with my aneurysms.
Yes.
Oh, I'll just take two paracetamol, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. Yeah, it's typical Northern men, isn't it? Yeah. Well, Scottish Northern.
Yeah, Scottish a bit hard.
Yeah, do you know that I think a third of men die of illnesses that could be cured?
Doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
It doesn't surprise me.
No, me either.
There you go. And on that bombshell,
it's time to say goodbye.
Well, Scott, it's been lovely to be in Ireland.
Yes, thank you for coming.
You will have to get you over to Angleterre sometime, won't we?
Yes, we will.
And
very soon.
And get you into my...
Hopefully once all this is now we're getting to the 6 month mark and we can...
They'll give you a clean bill of health exactly. And they'll fire you from a cannon over to Blighty.
And I can drive again. Yay!
Wheels doing donuts around Asda car park and a Saturday night back to your favourite pastime.
My McDonald's on my back.
With your boom boom music. With Enlarge.
Yeah.
With the massive in Ennis.
Yeah.
Smashing. Oh, well, look after yourself.
Thank you.
And
be good.
Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.